A buzz. Buzz.
When the tape ended, you were talking about the ADS scholarship interviews. And
okay.
Tell a little bit about
okay.
that.
Well, I myself went on interviews just 1 year. And a schedule was put together for me, which I wish today I would have done myself because it was a hectic schedule. But I had 2 interviews in Illinois, 1 in Wisconsin, 1 in Minnesota, and 1 in Colorado. And they were like, they were bunched together. I did the 2 in Illinois in 1 day, and then Wisconsin 1 day, Minnesota 1 day, and then Colorado another day. And I had to fly in between and have rental cars, etc. But I interviewed the students at their schools. We always arranged to have a conference room of some sort where we could do the interviewing. Mm-hmm. And we had set questions so that we all were interviewing in the same way and could compare responses to, you know, I can't even remember today what the questions were. Mm-hmm.
Did you write responses? Or that was, you just basically filled in a form? Or
well,
you didn't record them or anything?
We did
like
not record them. Mm-hmm. We took our own personal notes. Back then you didn't record.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Where today it's a lot easier. But we would, I don't know if you want to get into how we got to that point of interviewing students or
sure.
not.
Sure, yeah.
We would wait and we would get our test results after the second weekend of ADS. And we had a cutoff. I can't remember what that cutoff score was, but it was pretty high on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And we would start pulling the applications and the data together of the students, because we didn't just look at the ADS score. The ADS score pulled out the top 100 students, let's say, and then their class rank and their grade point and their curriculum and their recommendations all were part of the formula that got us to what we considered to be the most well-rounded, balanced scholars. And so then the next step, we brought that list down to 30, 35 people, and then those would be the ones that we would interview. There was a team of the director of admissions, 5 what I call senior admission counselors. They'd been with the office for some time. They worked with the students quite extensively, and myself were part of the whole committee that did the selection. And then when we came back with the interviews, that was another component added in to, okay, now who do we offer these to? They all had to be ranked in order. Mm-hmm. So that we had alternates, because we didn't always get our scholarships accepted. Many students wanted to take the test just to see how well they could do. However, we never shared test results with them. But they just wanted to see how well they could do, and then, you know, they might have wanted to go. Harvard might have been their first choice, or uh-huh. or some other school.
How many were given out each year?
10.
10.
Mm-hmm. 10. And then in later years, we added what we called the Distinguished Freshman Scholarship. And we were able to offer 5 of those.
Hmm.
The difference being the Alumni Distinguished Scholarship was a full ride for 4 years. The Distinguished Freshman was tuition only, which included the out-of-state tuition as well.
So that must have been attractive, too.
That was out-of-state, attractive. Out-of-state, yes, it was. Students. It was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the out-of-state was more or less waived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did in the course of were some students surprised when they actually
oh, yes.
either got the interview
oh,
or
well the interview yes it, they were very nervous. Mm-hmm. I can remember the ones that I interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
But when we had the practice that besides the letter of offer, we always wanted to call and let them know that they were being named an ADS scholar, and you would get you know, just jumping for joy, or a real you know, loud, oh, you know, Mom and Dad, I won, you know, lots of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember anyone just being, oh, okay.
You mentioned some of your immediate supervisors, and you talked a little bit about some of the other presidents that you worked with. Some of those others that I haven't really interviewed yet, that you did mention, Horace King, and Ira Polly.
And Ira Polly.
Uh-huh.
Ira Polly, he was brought to the campus to do an admissions, I can't think of the word I want. Look into it.
Survey it.
It wasn't really called. It was a report.
Evaluation.
Commission on Admissions.
Oh, okay.
Seems like what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what president was here then. But, and I think Ira was superintendent of schools prior to coming to MSU and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was just, he did that. Gordon Sabine left. It was a natural, I guess, to put Ira in as an assistant to the provost.
Yeah. Well, he had been the superintendent of Michigan Public Schools. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The how many? Well, so your jobs with admission, is it later on? Did you assume more responsibilities or?
Well, I managed the whole office. We had a clerical staff of 50-some.
Okay.
And when you added the professional staff to it, we probably were about 65. But I, you know, in a management view, you see that the work is done.
Mm-hmm.
We had office supervisors. The office was divided in sections. Some people work strictly with freshman admissions, some work with transfer, graduate, and just processing the applications initially. Each one of those areas had to have a office supervisor because I couldn't be everywhere
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I managed the budget for the total office. Any special recruitment that we did, like we had what we called green carpet days.
Mm-hmm.
Green carpet days were in the spring of the year or summer, and we would invite students to come to visit the campus, to see the campus, to learn about admissions and financial aid. I would always arrange those. We would have five of those during the summer. Through the course of the year, we started having football outings in the fall. We would invite students to come to the campus for a football game and listen to a admissions recruitment presentation. I did those. I did all logistics that had anything to do with bringing students to the campus, any large groups,
mm-hmm.
And the budget, and that filled my time very well, more than 60%.
When did you move to a newer building?
We moved to the new ad building in 1969, December.
So that was...
That brought us...
President Hanna would have been gone by then.
President Hanna was still here.
Okay.
President Hanna got to be in the new building before he retired.
Mm-hmm.
The admissions and scholarship office prior to that was housed in student services. And then the registrar's office was in the old ad building, which is now Lenton Hall. and so was Gordon and I. And then when we got the new ed building, we all were under one roof.
Mm-hmm. What were your impressions?
Logistically, it was much easier.
What were your impressions of that building when you first moved in?
It was nice and new, and it was air conditioned. That's all. And it was nice. It was nice to be all under one roof,
mm-hmm.
because it was easier to get materials. You know, we always had to have runners back and forth. It was easier for both Gordon and myself to have to do things with the registrar's office or the admissions office. So. It didn't seem to take any less time away from the job, but it was more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
It was more. And I think it gave, not necessarily us, but it gave the staffs, like they knew us better, instead of just being the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of a family.
Yeah. So the physical location was critical.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. yes, definitely.
What technological changes did you see in the course of your work, initially as a secretary and then ultimately as a supervisor,
well,
affecting your field? What were some of those technological things that you experienced?
Well, I went through less secretarial, clerical type work to more management tasks, as talking with staff, hiring staff, firing staff, evaluating staff, working with figures every day. And then computers came in just not more than 2 years before I retired. So I didn't see a lot of technical changes as such, not like what's happened in the last 10
years.
Definitely, they've mm-hmm. gone through a lot of major changes mm-hmm. in the last 10 years. We had support from the beginning from what was then called data processing. They would key punch and generate all of our address labels to send to students or high schools or whatever. So
they were there.
That's the only technical
behind
thing.
The scenes, rather.
They
than
were
you
behind
do
the
it.
Scenes, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have accounting training, or did you?
No, I did not.
You.
I just had.
Was on the job.
I just had general bookkeeping.
Uh-huh.
I think I was very fortunate in that I was able to go from high school without any advanced training, and go from non-secretarial tasks to secretarial tasks to management, and then on up into administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think, because I'm a good worker, I don't like to waste time, and I worked for good people.
Mm-hmm.
And I apparently had some skills I wasn't aware of.
How was it that you came to work at the MSU Museum?
I had retired, and...
What year was that?
I had retired in August of 91, and in the summer of 92, my daughter was working with Terry Schaefer, who was in the Agricultural Heritage Division of the museum, and they were working with what they called Country Life Historic Park at the Michigan State Fair. And I had no idea what it was about, but my daughter was responsible for children activities, whatever that was supposed to mean, and she needed help. So she asked me to help her out. So that's how I got acquainted with the museum. I guess they liked me. The winter of 93, I was getting bored with home activities, that is cleaning house. Everything else had gotten done from retirement. And Julie Avery had called me at the time. I was thinking about looking for something. I had no idea what that was going to be. Maybe it was just going to be a sales clerk somewhere. I didn't know. But anyway, Julie called me, and they needed someone with MSU background, administrative, and wondered if I might be interested, and they wanted somebody on a part-time basis. And I can remember saying to her, well, I would like to, but I don't like computers, because I had no experience with computers. Other than in admissions when I left, we were just getting them, and we could look up what they said online to see that we had an application from somebody and know where they were from. Mm-hmm. That was as far as it had gone. So Julie says, oh, well, she says, that's no problem, I'll teach you. So I took a job that was 19 hours a week that has grown to 30 hours a week, with now I'm back as a administrative professional classification, and I have learned how to do research, how to put an exhibit together. We had a very successful Fairtime exhibit that we had at the museum, 2000 and 2001. I work with grants. I never knew I'd write a grant, and I write grants. I do budgets. I seek money from sponsors, because the museum is not 100% general funded.
Mm-hmm. So grants are a major portion of the budget?
Grants are a major portion of the budget, right?
How would you describe the Country Life Historic Park, just for the record?
How would I describe it? Probably the first experience that most urban people in that area, in Detroit, would have had with how things used to be. I meant like, you know, 80, 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Churning butter. Most of them wouldn't even know what that was. What else did we have? Old-time children activities.
You said your daughter was involved in that.
Well, not this portion. Mm-hmm. The first year that we went down there, we did activities with children like painting or cutting out animal designs and having them glue seeds on them to decorate them, mm-hmm. or circled medallions. They felt that there needed to be a place for children to go, to do something different than walk around the fairgrounds and be on the rides and so forth. And that was just part of that. We had them coloring with vegetables. Hmm. And coloring books and things like that. They really needed it staffed. And we had a huge tent, and we had children in there all day long. Probably we had enough tables maybe for 20 children at one time, and they were filled all the time. And parents would interact as well. Parents would help the children with it. But that particular activity grew into an activity done by what we call the farm lady. She's a lady out of Novi. She's a very dear friend now. But she works with children and brings in animals, and animals that they might not have ever seen. Pygmy goats, chickens that you don't see today. She does old activities, playing marbles the way they used to play them, walking on sticks. That's all that comes to my mind right at the moment. Mm-hmm. But the area was large enough. We brought oxen in from Tillers International in Kalamazoo who today work with countries that don't have access to the mechanical machinery that there is, and they have to use the old-fashioned ways. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, they demonstrated how oxen behave, how they work. We showed them how you make oxen yokes by hand, mm-hmm. and they're made out of wood, blacksmithing.
Did the people dressed in period costume, or?
Only Tillers and Charlton Park were the only two that did that. Mm-hmm. We wanted to at times, mm-hmm. but they were the only. Oh, and I guess Greenfield Village employees also did, mm-hmm. because they would make, what did they do? I know they made soup on old cast iron kettles, mm-hmm. over a fire. But I think it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm. One year I know they had a shingle mill.
We built a barn.
Uh-huh.
Put it up by hand.
Erected a barn
mm-hmm. from scratch, I guess you would say, and all the fittings were done with old-time instruments and placed together and put up by hand.
Did they take the barn down?
Yep, they took the barn down, and it belongs to Tillers now, mm-hmm. today. No, I beg your pardon. That barn went to Margaret Schmidt, our farm lady.
Oh, yeah.
eventually it went there. Mm-hmm. They would take it down and then put it up, mm-hmm. at different places.
Mm-hmm. How did the public receive the...
Our surveys that we did, it appeared that they did very well. The older generation really enjoyed it because it made them recall their own memories, mm-hmm. of how things used to be.
What some of the other work that you did at the that you've done? You mentioned the Country Fair exhibit that you worked on. That was Julie.
That was based on Julie Avery's research. And then,
what did you learn from that? From putting that museum together.
You mean the Country Life Historic Park?
No, not that. I mean, what did you learn from the assisting with the exhibit that when you worked with Julie?
When we worked with Julie, mm-hmm. Well, it was a whole new area for me. I guess what I enjoy yesteryear myself. So I enjoyed all the exhibits that were brought together, mm-hmm. there within one large park. I enjoyed meeting the people that we collaborated with. That's all I can say on that one.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't come from a farm background, did you? Or did you have some?
Well, yes, no. When I lived in Gaylord, one of my aunts and uncles had a large dairy farm, and my uncle was responsible for the Sebago potato. Mm. And back in those years, kids in the fall were let out of school to go pick potatoes. And I can remember that because I did it. So from that standpoint, you know, I wasn't raised on a farm, but I've always been around cattle, mm-hmm. Through having relatives.
Mm-hmm. How about your work with Julie on the exhibit?
On the Country Life one or the Fairtime
one?
No,
the Fairtime.
The Fairtime one. Mm-hmm. That was fun, and that was a long, drawn-out experience. I think we started in 95 or 96, and we put the Fairtime project was several activities. First being, we put together traveling exhibits for fairs or anyone else interested. They were made up from old posters, fairtime posters, that were done back in the 1880s to 1920s. And the collection itself has 246 pieces. And we would go through, there were three of them that we wanted to do. We wanted to do what we called America Fairs Educating America, Livestock Heritage, and Horse Racing as Entertainment. And we selected the pieces of artwork that would be in these exhibits, so that each exhibit has anywhere from 22 to 30 pieces in it. And that really sounds simple, but it took a lot to get to get that done. And we had to, this is all original artwork, and we had to have them reproduced as closely as possible to the original in color and content and so forth, because many of our vendors didn't have the facilities that would guarantee the protection of the originals. So we had them duplicated and framed and carrying cases made and so forth. That was the first phase. The second phase was to work with Equity Studios out of Sturgis, Michigan, which produces videos of different things. They've done Michigan bridges, Michigan highways, those two come to mind right at the moment, but it all has to do with Michigan history. And they did one on Michigan fairs, and so we collaborated with each other on that. And then a third component was a book that we put together that includes a lot of essays. Julie has a couple of articles, and again, we have the artwork in there. And then creating the exhibit at the museum itself. We worked with a committee of 12 people that represented fair managers, Julie and myself, Michigan Department of Agriculture, and the Michigan Fairs Association, because we collaborated. It was a three-way collaboration to put this whole project on. We had to write grants for funding. We had to seek sponsorship from other people like W.K. Kellogg Foundation for money. Who else? A couple of the amusement people out there. The most fun part of that was just being part of putting an exhibit together, working on it for 3 years, doing research, going out of state to different museums, different libraries, trying to find photos, and then photos of old-time fairs and et cetera. And then bringing it all together and putting a story with it. Julie's good at putting the story with it. But just to see it all work out and to have different people's ideas. The exhibit, there were three parts to it. We had three rooms. We had what we call today's fairs that represented what fairs are like today. And then we had another section that was all this artwork that told a complete story. And then Floral Hall, which had over 200 items in it that you would have seen at a fair 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. We also had what we called an Aggie Research Room that was put together for children activities like quizzes and so forth, to quiz them on grains and horse breeds and what a farm is like and stuff. Did you see it by the chance?
I saw portions of it, yeah.
Did you see the whole thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did you think about it?
I thought it was great.
Yeah, we did too.
A lot of work. Yeah. Especially something original too.
Well,
pull it together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And another fun part was we scheduled several events with that exhibit. We brought in what we called historic home day arts, and we had people demonstrating rug weaving, making lace, making wreaths out of hair. We had a lady that collects millinery items, and that was just fun. The great big bloomy hats and so forth, you know, like you see the ladies wear at the Kentucky Derby or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then we brought a 70-foot brand new Ferris wheel. I'm sure you saw that.
70-foot.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. And people were able to take rides. We had clowns. We tried to make a fairtime atmosphere without it being at a regular fair. We brought in clowns. We had we brought in our own MSU draft horses and had wagon rides around the circuit.